Welcome to Florida Matters More, the podcast for Florida Matters, WUSF Public Media's show about the issues and events that Floridians care about. I'm Robin Sessingham, host of Florida Matters. You can hear Florida Matters Tuesday evenings at 6:30 and Sunday mornings at 7:30 on WUSF 89.7 or streaming on WUSFnews.org. You can also hear it Mondays at 10 p.m. on classical WSMR 89.1 and 103.9. This week on Florida Matters, it's our monthly Reporters Roundtable, and we'll keep the conversation going with William March, who writes about politics for the Tampa Bay Times, is a longtime politics reporter in the Tampa Bay area, and Justine Griffin, who reports on health for the Tampa Bay Times, and Stephanie Colombini, producer of Florida Matters. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks, Robin.
So, William March, there have been some big changes in Cuba that could affect Florida. No Castros are running Cuba for the first time in a long time. But while Raul Castro's successor, Miguel Diaz-Canel, was chosen and carefully groomed by the Castros, do you think we're going to see any changes?
I think in the short term, no. And there's a lot of speculation that Canel could eventually become independent of the Castro philosophy, the Castro governing style, but there's no indication he's doing it right now, and he's certainly not going to do that in a hurry.
He's big in the Communist Party.
And, right. You know. The possibility for change could come after he establishes his independence, creates his own political power base, independent from the Castros.
The Cuban Americans in Miami seem very unimpressed.
I don't see a lot of optimism on their part. Read some stories recently from Cuba, not a lot of optimism there about major changes. And the government played the power transition down in Cuba. They did not make a big show of it. It was a small, not heavily publicized formal ceremony. People just sort of went about their business.
They wanted it to seem like business as usual. And
right.
Everything's going to continue
right.
Status quo. Stephanie, I want to hear about this new museum. The Tom and Mary James Museum for Western and Wildlife Art opened this month in St. Petersburg, and you were there.
Yeah, I got a chance to get a preview of the museum. It was really cool. It's huge, considering it's kind of a niche art form, you know, Western and wildlife art. So Tom James, he's the former chairman of Raymond James Financial. He was also really involved with the Dolly Museum, also in downtown St. Pete. This is him and his wife's private collection, part of it. So they have this massive collection of Western and wildlife art. I know it's, I believe, over 3,000 pieces. So they put about 400 in this museum in downtown. And, you know, you're coming off the street in this urban landscape and you go into this museum and it's like you're in this, you know, Western, kind of abstract Western world. There's sandstone jutting out at weird angles. So you feel like you're going through a rocky canyon, and there's a waterfall, and really just a lot of Native American art, nature pieces, Florida animals, you know, the Western cowboys and landscapes. And what's really cool is, you know, when I would think of Western art, I kind of think of older pieces that maybe were done during the time period of, you know, landscapes and stuff, but almost all of the artwork is new by living artists who are still alive, and, you know, you'll see pieces from 2016 and things like that. So they're depicting scenes from maybe the 1800s, but it's, you know, young emerging artists who are doing all the work. And it's not all stereotypical cowboys and Indians, you know, there's a lot of stuff by Native American artists, and, you know, it's really, if you like Western and wildlife art, you're definitely going to want to check it out. I'd like to go back because I was skimming through it, and I really was surprised at how much artwork there is in there. There's a jewelry collection as well, so it's worth checking out. And that's just one of many, you know, there's three museums. So the James Museum opened this month. Recently, the Imagine Museum opened down there, which is another private collection of glass art. And then there's a Arts and Crafts Museum, this huge museum that's going to open in 2019. So downtown St. Pete already had a ton of art museums. Now they're getting more. It's really going to be on the map as an arts mecca in Florida, I think.
Where is that? Where's the Western Museum?
The Western Museum is on Central Ave, close to the water. So it's pretty far down on Central Avenue.
How's the gift shop?
It kind of had its soft opening a couple weeks ago, and then the grand opening is this weekend, the 27th, 28th, is when they're having the grand opening weekend. So I imagine the gift shop will be up and running then. It wasn't when I was there, but I know they've got that. They've got a restaurant.
They have a restaurant.
Dats, yeah, which is in Tampa, really mm-hmm. popular. So,
oh.
Yeah. Good burgers.
Fun, yeah. Because yeah. it sounds like it's pretty big. It's going to take a while to get through that museum, so mm-hmm. you get
Definitely
hungry.
Take an afternoon, yeah.
But it's within walking distance of everything in downtown.
Yeah, I mean, you got the MFA farther down on the waterfront. The Chihuly is on Central as well, but kind of on the other, you know, a few blocks down. But, yeah, you could easily spend a couple days just going to all the art museums there.
Did you say you lived in St. Pete, Justine?
I do, yes.
Have you been there yet?
I have not, but I think I've seen some of the sneak peek photos. Mm-hmm. It does look enormous and beautiful. I'm excited.
And moving from art museum to strip clubs, Justine, Joe Ridner, yes. We talked about Joe Ridner's case. He wants to grow his own marijuana so he can juice it.
Right.
And a judge has ruled in his favor right now. The Department of Health is appealing that.
Right.
Had you heard of juicing marijuana before this?
I had not. No.
Me either.
Yeah.
I feel so much better yeah. because I thought I am so out of it. I mean, I heard of smoking it, eating it, mm-hmm. But I never heard of juicing
sort of
it, and
tease,
it doesn't seem
yeah,
like it would give juice. Much get much juice out of it.
I wonder what it would taste like.
Probably horrible.
Yeah,
I think
sure.
when you juice anything, do you ever try like the alfalfa that they have at the farmers markets and mm-hmm. stuff? It's hideous.
I can't imagine. That's a good question. The next time I talk to Mr. Ridner, I'm going to ask him.
I mean, but seriously, you would need probably just think how many plants, how many leaves you're going to need to get any juice out of that.
Well.
I mean, like, if you add water or something?
I think
right.
probably
you would
mix
definitely
it
add
with
a lot
gin.
Of water. Yeah, more gin.
It's very effective, then.
The interesting thing to me about this, though, is Joe Ridner himself. You introduced him, of course, as a strip club owner, and that's what he's famous for. And he's famous for filing litigation, although it's been years since he's had to allow his strip clubs to operate. But another aspect of Joe Redner's sort of public personality that people don't notice so much is the amount of suing that he's done
right.
in order wow. to enforce, in order to promote political points of view. The best example, I guess, before this one was his lawsuit against Hillsborough County over gay rights issues, in which he proclaimed himself to be gay
right.
in order to have standing to sue. And he basically said, okay, if you think I'm not, prove me wrong.
Wow. So he would be kind of considered maybe a libertarian?
He's very much a libertarian. Mm-hmm. But he has very liberal or progressive, whatever word you want to use, political views, especially on things like the environment and on things like use of medical marijuana.
Mm-hmm. And he's got, I guess, the means to sue.
Oh, yes.
Made some
sure.
money. Mm-hmm. Is it only through strip clubs?
No, actually, if my knowledge of Joe Redner's finances is correct, he has more money now as a result of the sale of Cigar City Brewery, his son's brewery that he was a major investor in, probably brought him more wealth than his adult entertainment empire had previously. He was already wealthy before that, but I think... the Cigar City sale added a bunch to it.
I missed that. When did they sell that?
A couple of years ago.
I want to say I wrote that story, too. I think it was about 2 years ago, and they sold to, I think it's Oscar River in Colorado. That might be wrong. Mm-hmm. It's Oscar Blues. Are you familiar with that can of beer? It's another craft brewery in Colorado.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so now they are... But yeah, that happened, I think, about 2 years ago.
What's Joey Ridner the younger doing now, then?
Well, didn't he retain control of the company or at least
he's
a management
still involved,
role?
Yeah. He bought a really beautiful everywhere. House in Tampa, I remember, shortly after that.
As you do.
How nice. Yeah.
Okay, so Justine, on a slightly less fun story, you wrote that there are the top five things killing Floridians. What is killing us?
I was hoping that it would be something that, you know, maybe Craig Pittman would write about, like alligators or snakes or something native to Florida.
Rattlesnakes and killer bees.
Unfortunately, it's not as exciting as that. It's sort of your most common health ailments that you sort of expect. Our weight, obesity was a big one. High blood pressure, diabetes. I'd have to go back and revisit the list.
What about the opioids? What about opioids? Is that one?
Yes, and that opioids have skyrocketed across the country too, not just Florida, but opioid use was a huge one.
Was that in the top five?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Florida as a whole is such a good demographic imitation of the nation as a whole that it's you're going to find when you look at things like causes of death in Florida, they're going to be very similar to the average of the nation as a whole because Florida's population is a good representation of the average of the nation as a whole in terms of demographic breakdown, race, suburban versus urban versus rural.
We've got a little of everything here, don't we?
Right. The only difference, of course, is Florida skews a little bit older than the rest of the nation, but not as much as people think.
Not as much as it used to. That's what I was thinking. All the retirees, you know, Miami Beach used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's very young there, I think.
Even St. Petersburg is a good example.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, St. Petersburg. That's a great example.
St. Petersburg has been getting younger for close to 15 or 20 years. It's been gradually decreasing in its proportion of elderly citizens.
Mm-hmm. I was very surprised, Justine, that we were talking about one of the proposed amendments to the Florida Constitution would be a ban on greyhound racing. And as a greyhound owner yourself, an owner of a rescued greyhound, I thought for sure you would say, oh, yes, everybody who's got greyhounds were in favor of that ban. But no, some greyhound advocates are saying they're not sure that would be a great idea. I thought that was really interesting.
It's complicated. A lot of the rescue groups have wonderful relationships with specific race owners. And so they get a steady stream of dogs that are retiring, coming off the track. Some of them have injuries, some of them don't. But they all basically go to these rescues for a rehab program where they have routine vet care, they're taken care of, and they're assessed before they're either put in foster families or adopted out. But the goal is to adopt all of these dogs out, find them homes.
So it's not necessarily that they were abused, it's just that they finished their racing life, just like horses do.
I don't want to say that the dogs aren't abused. They are bred for a specific purpose, and that is to race. Mm-hmm. And how you feel about that personally, you know, we're the dog is bred to race, whether it wants to race or not. That is what it's going to do, depending on how successful it is. So it is complicated. And as someone who owns a thoroughbred off the track, it's very similar. Horse owners are. Or especially race owners, there are some that are better than others. But I do think that some of the rescues have worked very hard to make these inroads into the greyhound racing industry, and they have good relationships with people who do care about the dogs that they're breeding and racing. And I think I understand that the way it's worded is the dog racing would end by a specific year, right? 2020. It would be over time.
So I'm not sure.
So it's not like Derby Lane would close its doors overnight,
right.
But it would still create an influx of hundreds of dogs, maybe more than that, that need to find homes. And I think that would be overwhelming to these little rescues where they're used to a steady stream of dogs, but not hundreds all at once. Where are those dogs going to go?
Aren't a lot of the paramutual facilities in favor of ending racing?
I would say so.
My understanding is that a lot of them, they have to hold races under current law. They have to have racing in order to have the real cash cows that they want to have, which is casino
slot
gambling.
Machines are, yeah.
Casino gambling gives them a lot more profit with a lot less expense. But under current law, they have to be paramutual facilities, meaning highlight horse racing or dog racing, in order to have the casino gambling. And I think a lot of the industry is in favor of what's been called decoupling, which is separating racing or highlay from the ability to have card games and slots.
That is William March. Thanks, William, for being here. A longtime political reporter in the Tampa Bay area. Thanks.
very long time.
Yeah. Very long time. And we've also been talking to Justine Griffin, a health reporter for the Tampa Bay Times. Thanks, Justine, for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And we have Stephanie Colombini, producer of Florida Matters. Stephanie, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Robin.
Thank you for joining us. Listen to Florida Matters Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. and Sunday mornings at 7:30 on WUSF 89.7. You can always find it online at WUSFnews.org. I'm Robin Sussingham. Come back next week for another episode of Florida Matters More. And subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher.